first time, because I was only 2 years old when my biological mother gave me away. I couldn't picture her face. I had no memories of her at all. I'm grateful to her for two things: bringing me into this world and giving me up. When I was a kid, I overheard various versions of my story, that she was an alcoholic or a drug addict, or maybe both. By the time I was 8, I'd been with 13 foster families and in 3 different children's homes. This might not have been entirely accurate, but it didn't matter after I moved into Jenny and Phil's. My last fresh start was when I married Matthew 3 years ago. He'd taken care of everything, sorted all the bills, the weekly shop, took my car for its MOT, and always made sure it was filled with petrol. I made that sound like a practical arrangement, didn't I? It wasn't. Some relationships are complicated. But he wasn't here now, and the bravado I felt walking here for the interview last week had vanished because the reality had hit that I was about to live with a stranger. I stopped at number 63. Opposite was a large building with a wooden sign that read, "Whispering Oaks Residential Care Home." In front of it was an elderly man, sitting on a wooden chair under the smoking shelter. It was as though he was looking in my direction, but his expression didn't change. He shook his head and hollered, "Strange shit goes on in there." "Are you talking to me?" I shouted back.
"I meant next door," he said. "That bloke and his mother."
"Right." I paused for a moment. "Maybe the mother's not really there, like in Psycho."
"I heard that," he said. "I'm not bloody deaf, and I'm not a bloody psycho."
"No," I said.
"Ah, sod it."
He stood and said,
"You're probably right,"
before shuffling into the building. I expected this suburban street to be quiet, but strange people weren't confined to city centres. They were everywhere. I turned to Dorothy Winter's house, a red brick, 4-storey end of terrace. The windows got gradually smaller the higher they were. My new home. There was no gate, and both of the sloping stone gateposts were engraved with the house number. They were just above waist height, and I gave them a firm shove to test their integrity. 2 leaning Tower of Pisas, which, thankfully, weren't going to fall down any day soon. I walked towards the house. The path was made of uneven concrete slabs and loose bricks jammed into the gaps. I stopped halfway to swap the suitcase to my other hand and glanced at the house next door. A middle-aged man, late 50s perhaps, was standing at the upstairs window. He raised a hand to wave, so I held up my aching arm and waved back a bit too eagerly. He wrinkled his nose, turned, and walked out of sight. What a nosy old git. Perhaps the smoking man was right. I'd have to keep my eye on him next door. The knocker on the large red door was a small, dismembered hand made of brass. Why would anyone want such a thing on their door? I tapped it against the door 3 times and felt like I was shaking hands with a child. It took Dorothy Winter's, top 20 bestseller in 1999, only a few seconds to open up.
"Hello, Rachel," she said, standing aside. "You're early. I was going to change into something more presentable before you arrived, but never mind."
She was dressed in a maroon knee-length leather pencil skirt and a cream silk blouse, and was the first person I'd ever seen who could pull off wearing leather below the waist. Her platinum blonde hair was styled in a loose bun at the side of her neck. She held a half-empty martini glass in her left hand, and I could smell the gin fumes from the step. Dorothy glanced at my rather pitiful suitcase. I felt bad for thinking of it like that, because it was the one Jenny and Phil gave me when I first moved out. It hadn't aged well, but I couldn't part with it.
"Are the rest of your things arriving later?" said Dorothy.
"No," I said, stepping inside. "I travel light. We used to live on a boat." Why had I said that? I'd only ever been on a return ferry across the channel on a booze run to Calais. Dorothy.